are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It's Thursday, December 12th, 2019. I'm Michael Brooks on a Michael Thursday. This is the five or sixth time, something in that ballpark, award-winning Majority Report. We're broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, Cole Stangler. He's a freelance journalist based in Paris, France. We're talking about the strikes against Emmanuel Macron's push for austerity. Is there a reformation of left political parties in France? And is it coming from the city of Marseille? Election day in the United Kingdom. Can Jeremy Corbyn and Labour defeat not only a Tory and Lib Dem parties, but a years-long smear campaign and war against them by all of the UK press? Boris Johnson certainly seems to be doing his best to help them. New polls as the steady upward tick for Bernie Sanders continues to come in. He leads in California and has over a massive, massive lead in voters under 45 and under 35. Basically, if you want a future, you are almost certainly going to be backing Bernie Sanders for obvious reasons. Senate Republicans look to hold a short impeachment trial despite Trump's desire for a, quote, aggressive defense. And part of that aggressive defense, Donald Trump will be looking to the success of O.J. Simpson and a shared connection to Jeffrey Epstein. Alan Dershowitz, baby.
A great legal mind.
Great legal mind.
He's worked with Steven Pinker.
I mean, that guy's worked. That guy, these are very smart people. Democrats help Republicans pass a Pentagon obscenity, a budget that will do nothing to end the U.S.-backed Saudi-led genocide in Yemen, nothing to prevent a war with Iran, nothing on a low-yield nuke ban. All of that passed along with, a couple of months ago, reauthorization of the Patriot Act. Also, Donald Trump gets his Space Force. So I guess the most dangerous, crazy man ever should have every single toy he wants. Democratic consultants are working with industry groups to destroy health reform. Israel's heading to its third election in, I believe, under a year after the indictment of Benjamin Netanyahu. There's going to be no Christmas break in the transport strike, a French union says. Donald Trump's campaign is deploying phone location tracking technology. And a Pentagon watchdog plans to review an award of $400 million border wall contracts to a firm touted by Donald Trump. New rules pushed forward by the Trump administration may further endanger Palestinian activists on college campuses, though others encourage a more technical, narrow reading. Remains to be seen. Weinstein and his accusers reach a tentative deal for $25 million. And is Chris Coons in trouble in a Democratic primary? Homeless moms who took over a vacant Oakland home say they aren't going anywhere. Solidarity. And new suspects in a apparently targeted kosher store in Jersey City, where three died. Apparently the suspects targeted the kosher store specifically. And it looks like an Indian court has rejected pleas by Muslims on building a Hindu temple at the Ayodhya site, which is a core driver of Hindu nationalism that of, is currently running India. People are voting in the United Kingdom. Bad sign, weather's very bad. Good sign, a lot of anecdotal and otherwise, you know, strong evidence of people saying, people voting for Labour the first time. There has been a decent uptick for Corbyn and Labour in the polls in the past couple of weeks. And it does seem that with at least, I mean, the media bias against Corbyn is gargantuan. I mean, the same BBC editor who shared basically a fake video. Essentially, there was the notion that a Labour activist had punched, I believe, an advisor to a Tory MP. Completely false. And the real, iPhone footage was put out and it debunked the story, but the video was shared by the BBC politics editor. And I use this as an example of what is overall a systemic BBC bias against Labour. And I listened to a British analyst on Navarra yesterday. I'm forgetting her name at the moment, but she said that the bias has been so bad that the day that Boris Johnson was speaking to a reporter, and the reporter was trying to show him a picture of a child with pneumonia sleeping on coats at a hospital because there wasn't a hospital bed available. And Boris Johnson took the phone out and put it in his pocket. Took the phone out of the reporter's hands, put it in his pocket because he didn't want to see the picture. And this analyst said, you know, when that story, I believe it was that story, led the news that night, she realized how bad the coverage had been because she was surprised that they actually led with that story. Here it is if you want to see it. It happens earlier in the clip, I think it's that.
Have you seen the photo?
I've just been told about it by the BBC. We need to be making investments.
This is the photo.
We need to be making investments now. And that's why we're putting £34 billion.
This is a four-year-old boy, Prime Minister, suspected of pneumonia, forced to lie on the floor on a pile of coats.
I understand. And obviously we have every possible sympathy for everybody who has a bad experience in the NHS. And that's why we're putting the record investment into the NHS now. But we cannot get on and make those investments. We cannot get on and turn this country...
Well, I guess... He does take it somewhere in this clip. I think he takes it... Anyway, I don't know. I guess that's a...
My phone, put it in your pocket, Prime Minister.
Yeah.
Forward. And we are investing in the NHS. And what would be the worst thing possible would be to have a government that is mired in more deadlock, more disarray, and unable to move forward. So I have every sympathy with...
You refuse to look at the photo. You've taken my phone, put it in your pocket, Prime Minister. His mother says the NHS is in crisis. What's your response to that?
I'm sorry, look.
So, look, but it seems that some people are really starting to pay attention and realizing that the very state that the NHS is up for play, the very nature of whatever remnants after 10 years of Tory and Lib Dem attacks are in play. Now, of course, there's a handful of seats where you should vote tactically. Those are a very small amount of seats and you should be very clear. To their credit, a couple of Lib Dem MPs have at the last minute encouraged a Labour vote so that at least mean in two specific seats or one specific seat. So that at least means that at least some of them are genuine. Now, Boris Johnson, in spite of, again, I mean, Jeremy Corbyn sits there and gets his reputation slandered. He gets dismissed. He gets condescended to. He gets lied about and mostly handles it. And if anything, I wish maybe a bit more aggressively. Boris Johnson does not want to talk about his government's record and certainly get called on any of his constant dishonesty. Here he is earlier today. Watch how he dodges this reporter and watch what his campaign spokesperson does.
Morning, Prime Minister. Will you come on? Good morning, Britain, Prime Minister.
I've just had
a reaction here from one of the minders.
Wow. Okay, the look push, thanks very much. On his face.
Wow.
That minder.
You're not getting near Boris.
Prime Minister, will you come on Good Morning Britain and deliver on your promise to talk to Piers and Susanna? We're ready to go. We're live on ITV right now. Prime Minister, we have an earpiece in my pocket. You're more than welcome to come on. I'm actually being...
The guy said, fuck off, for people who didn't pick it up. By the way, I love that guy's face. I relate to him. And you know what... Bhaskar Sunkara made a great point about this actually on the same Nuvara thing last night he was on. He was like, you know, the difference is, I mean, one, in the United States, reporters cannot get close to a president like that, right? So there's definitely a more open and adversarial system in that respect than the UK. On the flip side, for all of the comparisons between Johnson and Trump, and there are many, Donald Trump would have been combative. He wouldn't have hidden a fridge. I don't see how anybody likes how that looks. Here's Jeremy Corbyn responding.
It's a serious manifesto and it's fully funded, and we've put ourselves out there to be questioned on this. I take questions on our manifesto. John McDonnell does and everybody else. I don't have to go and hide in a fridge.
Go out there. You still have time. Save your country. Vote for the Labour Party.
Yeah, if you can vote in this election and you're listening to this right now, go do that.
Go please. Do it. It's okay. A little bit of rain sucks. This one actually, and you know, I won't even do the fake thing. There are some elections that you shouldn't miss any. I get it. Of course you shouldn't. But this is one you can't miss. This is going to be the very fate of your National Health Service and the nature of your country's in play. Go vote for Jeremy Corbyn. Vote for Labour. Do it now.
And you know what? I feel like everyone listening to this program probably is already voting, in which case, tell other people to vote. Help get out the vote.
Yeah, get your friends that aren't Majority Report listeners in the UK.
Exactly. Today's show is brought to you in part by Kariuma. Kariuma marries old school designs and new school ethics for sneakers that are good looking, crazy comfy, and consciously made. With an obsessive eye for detail, they make their sneakers by hand with premium natural materials, including cotton sourced from fair trade initiatives. They also make their outsoles using raw natural rubber and ensure that factory workers earn their fair wages and experience safe working conditions. They are important things that they don't just compromise, Even their packaging is made from recycled and 100% recyclable materials. Plus, they make up for carbon emissions released during transportation by purchasing carbon offsets, creating shipping footprints of a balance of zero. Best of all, their brand new IRI sneaker is knit from self-generating bamboo and recycled plastics from heel to toe. I do not have a pair of Kariumas yet. I'm actually in the process of deciding which pair I'm going to order. The IRI is very appealing, but things have improved immeasurably in this office to not have to look at the eyesores that Sam used to lug in here on his feet. He's now got a proper pair of decent, fashionable, awesome-looking shoes. They're more comfortable, and trust me, he needs every bit of comfort he can get. Kariuma is helping all of us by upping Sam's sneaker game. For a limited time, our listeners can get an exclusive 15% off of their first pair of Kariuma sneakers. They ship worldwide and offer express shipping in the USA. Plus, if for any reason they don't fit perfectly, you can return them free of charge. Go to Kari, that's Kariuma.com/majority to get 15% off. That's Kariuma.com/majority for 15% off. Today. We're going to take a brief break. Oh, wait a second. One more piece of information to share. One of today's sponsors is News Voice, which is the first ever entirely open, crowdsourced, and democratized platform for news. And you can download the app for free at newsvoice.com/majority. In a country where the vast majority of news is owned by the same five huge corporations, it's important for us to always pay attention to where our news is coming from. Who owns which media outlets and what political biases may be in play. And that's exactly what News Voice helps you keep track of. News Voice is a free crowdsourced website and mobile app that lets you create personalized news feed and maintain a clear picture of where your news is coming from and what political slants may exist. It helps you aggregate news from corporate outlets, international outlets, local news, and independent media, giving you access to every side of every story. News Voice is fueled by its community of users who contribute to the platform by fact-checking, submitting stories and sources that are missing, upvoting stories, and writing story summaries. You can also comment on stories and debate politics with other members of the community. That's wrong! And through staying active in the community, you can level up and earn perks on the platform. The News Voice Play feature lets you listen to your personalized news feed every day through customizable audio news playlists. It's your own personally tailored radio station for news. NewsVoice is a next generation news aggregator and social media platform that values transparency, good journalism, and produces political discussions. Get totally free access by going to newsvoice.com/majority. We've put a link underneath this video if you're watching on YouTube. We're going to take a brief break and come right back with Cole Stengler. Welcome back to the Majority Report. Michael Brooks here. Joining us now is Cole Stengler. He is a journalist based in Paris. Cole, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, Cole, there have been strikes in France that apparently I'm just seeing that the transport union has said are not going to be stopping for the Christmas holidays. What's happening? What's Macron trying to push through? How long have the strikes been going on? How effective are they? And also, how do they relate to the Yellow Vest movement?
Lots of good questions there. This movement started on December 5th, so exactly a week ago, and this is in response to Emmanuel Macron's government's proposed retirement reforms. These reforms had been a part of Emmanuel Macron's program since he ran for president in 2017. We knew they were going to happen at some point during his presidency. The government released a report that included a number of different reforms earlier in the summer. And what we've seen now after that report became public was unions' response to what was in that. And so there are really three main points that are driving the anger here. Without getting into too much detail, there are three main points of this reform that are really upsetting people, that are mobilizing unions and not just unions in the streets. The first big point is that Emmanuel Macron wants to create what he calls a so-called universal system. France right now has 42 different pension schemes, covering some in the private sector. They're what are called special regimes. So these are basically union negotiated agreements that cover transport workers in particular, although other types of workers. You have public sector workers as well. Everyone has these different retirement regimes they're covered by, some of which have better benefits, relatively speaking, than others. Macron has proposed to merge these into one universal system. That's upsetting people that have currently benefits that provide, again, relative advantages. So transit workers in particular, public sector workers as well, teachers, hospital workers. That's one point. The second point is, as part of these proposed reforms, they've proposed hiking basically the earliest age at which one can retire and collect full benefits. Currently, that age is set at 62. Although many people retire later, you can retire as early as 62 for most private sector workers. Government has proposed hiking that to the age of 64. And then the third point, again, kind of wonky, but important to note here in France, is the creation of what Macron is calling a points-based retirement system, effectively changing the calculation that is used to get benefits. Right now, France has a proponents of the current system called a solidarity-based system, where anybody who works in France pays a certain amount of their paycheck into funding Social Security. When they retire, they're getting money from Social Security that's based on most workers in the private sector. It's the best 25 years, the most highest earning 25 years of your career. You get a retirement check based on that. For the public sector, it's the last 6 months. And what Macron is proposing to do is to abolish, essentially get rid of that system and change it into what he calls a point system, an individualized system where you're collecting quote-unquote points throughout your career. And a lot of the unions deem that to be a kind of individualization of this of the French system. Those three points have upset unions. And we saw the first national strike that was organized on December 5th, a week ago. You had 800,000 people turning out across the country, according to the police, 1.5 million, according to unions, one of the biggest union mobilizations that we've seen in some time in France. And subsequent to that, so since last Thursday, We've had rolling transportation strikes, and that's been led by workers at the SNCF, which is the French National Railway System, which have induced disruptions across the entire system. Today, I think 1-4 long-distance TGVs is running. You also have disruptions in the Paris metro system. It's another big transport system that's been affected by the strikes. And the trans system is effectively paralyzed today in Paris. That's been going on since last Thursday. So in addition to these intermittent strikes, the transit strikes have been ongoing. There was another big national walkout that was organized earlier in this week on Tuesday, the 10th. And finally, you have another walkout, national walkout day, that's been organized next week, next Tuesday, December 17th, I believe. Next Tuesday, right, the 17th, next walkout day.
How does this relate to the Yellow Vest movement?
Well, you know, I think it relates in the sense that the Yellow Vest movement was a response to Macron's presidency and a certain style of governing, and also very specific policies that the government has approved. So Emmanuel Macron, when he came to power, his very first budget as French president, he went and abolished the wealth tax, turned it into a tax on property holdings. That wealth tax previously applied to anyone with assets over 1.3 million euros. So we're not just talking about wealthy people. We're talking about really the super rich in France. That was Emmanuel Macron's first budget. He went and did that. We've seen cuts to in low-income housing aid. We've seen, and this is a very important point, I think, not necessarily cuts, but essentially a freeze in spending on public services. We've seen a situation in public hospitals that's degraded substantially in the last few years. You have hospital workers complaining about not having enough staffing. You have severe underfunding. And the Yellow Vests, in a lot of ways, were a response to this underfunding of public services, the sense of frustration at the government. The main measure, of course, the Yellow Vest was the fuel tax, this idea that they were being asked, regular people are being asked to pay, you know, chip in an extra more money per month while the super rich are getting a massive tax cut. That was a big part of the Yellow Vest. The retirement reform movement relates to that in the sense that what you have is people that are frustrated about what they see as a president who wants to undo a system that's proven effective, a redistributive system that provides benefits to the general public, and confronted with the president who doesn't appear to believe in those values. And so we're seeing that clash right now. And you know, another point too that's really interesting here is that the strikes right now benefit from pretty substantial public support. Even before they started, I saw polls that said 6 in 10 people supported the strikes. I was just looking just now in a poll that nearly 70% of the public says they support the movement. So despite all the transit hassles they're causing, people feel strongly about defending this retirement system.
Let's go to the kind of potential regrouping of the left in a minute, but placing Emmanuel Macron, both in terms of his sort of what I read is pretty persistent lack of popularity in France, and then the fact that this presidency, I mean, Justin Trudeau was kind of for a minute the sort of poster child of the sort of goofy, woke, pseudo woke kind of neoliberalism, and he's the guy who's going to save all of us, and you know, for that sort of like dead neoliberal mindset. But Macron is really, I mean, I think partially just because objectively he's obviously a much more formidable person than a Justin Trudeau. But he has been the outlet for every type of projection, from the kind of like, you know, the type of Democrats who sort of primarily reject Trump on aesthetic grounds more than anything else, it seems, and or people who are, you know, they don't want to sort of move us to the next phase of real 21st century problem solving. They want to kind of go back to the 1990s. And so he's been the sort of projection of fantasy and hope for neoliberalism, for a certain type of corporate globalization, for NATO, for the European project. And I guess I'm just curious, starting from the fact that he remains unpopular at home, how has this sort of rhetoric and sense of projection met up against reality across the board with him. I mean, even again, even beyond the fact that obviously we on the left wouldn't like him, but just in terms of like what's actually happening here with this presidency.
Yeah, you know, it's a presidency that began with a lot of optimism, and I think as you're referring to, and really not just the beginning of his presidency, but really up until today, we see this kind of projection, not exclusively coming from French liberals and French business elites, but really from liberals across the world, looking at Macron as a kind of I don't know, savior example for their world vision that seems to be crumbling from because of pressure from a variety of different ways. You know, but Macron's presidency, he's declined in popularity. There's been, I think, a brief recovery at this point a little bit over a year ago, but then that was just before the Yellow Vest movement, which saw his popularity decline further. You know, this is someone the current numbers, I think, are probably around less than 40% of the population. I think that's always an important point to make. We know how unpopular Donald Trump is in the United States. Again, that's relative because you look at France and Macron is more unpopular in France than Donald Trump is in the United States. I think right. That's a really important point to make. And I think, it really goes back to, it's a really simple point, but it bears repeating because I think a lot of the international commentators forget this point, but Emmanuel Macron never truly had a popular mandate to govern. He won the presidency because he was facing off against Marine Le Pen, a candidate from the far right National Front Party. And as much as people do not like Macron, fortunately, people in France continue to dislike Marine Le Pen a great deal more. And fortunately, I think in that showdown, Macron won the election.
Right.
The problem is that Emmanuel Macron has governed as if he has a massive popular mandate. He then won a significant majority of the National Assembly that was characterized also by the lowest turnout in the history of the Fifth Republic because people were fed up with the options on the table. And the problem with Emmanuel Macron's governing is that he's taken himself to have a much broader mandate than he actually has. And you see that even in the way that he handles negotiating his reform. So one important point about this retirement reform is traditionally in France, traditionally, I should say, in the last 15 years or so, when you're trying to impose potentially controversial reforms, whether it's retirement, whether it's on unemployment insurance, whether it's about labor law, etc., there's mandated collective bargaining with unions and most French governments know that, okay, you're probably going to piss off the CGT, which is the union on the left, the main big union on the left in France. And Macron understood that. But what Macron has somehow managed to do as well, I think this really speaks to his governing strategy, is that he's managed now to lose the support of the biggest union in France, which is a really moderate centrist union over retirement reform, by essentially running roughshod over their, what they call their red line over this retirement reform, which is the idea of hiking the retirement age. And I think it really speaks to Macron's governance. They essentially decided they didn't need the support of the CFDT, or at the very least decided they could cross this red line and there wouldn't be consequences. And it shows, a lack of respect, I think, for even these moderate unions, where Macron was essentially and his advisors take themselves to have this mandate where essentially they can go in and push these reforms across no matter what the polls say, no matter what political parties say, and no matter what even the trade unions say, even the most moderate trade unions.
Let's go to the left in just 1 minute. But I mean, I was very happy to hear you reiterate the lack of popularity for Le Pen. So has the far right not been able to exploit this, as a lot of us were really scared that they would be able to, that critically support, you know, that voting for Macron to prevent a catastrophe was simply delaying something that was inevitable unless the left got itself together. But just before we get to the left, I mean, you said they're unpopular.
Mm. Yeah, you know, I think that's an important point about French politics too that bears repeating, is that Macron is unpopular, but so is Marine Le Pen, is very unpopular. I think around 20% approval.
Great.
And the
Great.
Left is also very unpopular. Everyone, right. Everyone ultimately is really unpopular, which is frightening in some ways, but it also means that there's an opening for for whatever force can somehow manage to assemble a coalition. But right now, the scene is very fragmented.
So what about the left reformulating itself? And I guess before we do that, could you talk a little bit about why the left has become so, why they are so unpopular? And give us both, I guess, why the Socialist Party has floundered so much, but also why, I mean, people forget in the last election, it was, you know, Mélenchon was right on the heels of Le Pen and Macron. And it could have been Macron versus Mélenchon. You know. So what's happened with Jean-Luc Mélenchon as well in terms of his formation?
To respond to the first part of your question, I think the Socialist Party has essentially imploded. They still exist on a local level, and that's important. We can get to that later, maybe. But on a national level, the Socialist Party has seen a tremendous drop in support, and that's essentially tied to the extremely unpopular presidency of François Hollande, which is the president who preceded Emmanuel Macron. Hollande, who finished his presidency with around 4% approval rating, someone who came in with his famous line before being elected president was, "My enemy is finance," trying to come after Nicolas Sarkozy and kind of turn the page on the Sarkozy era, promising to reform the European Union, to rein in finance, to end caps on public spending. And essentially, Hollande's presidency did not mark any significant change in any of those fields. And furthermore, actually saw essentially what you call an attack on trade union rights with labor law reforms. And important to note as well that towards the end of his presidency, Hollande's economic minister was, of course, none other than Emmanuel Macron. So that's how Macron gained popularity, or at least became well known as a public figure. The Socialist Party has really struggled to recover from that. People don't trust the Socialist Party. People felt like they had betrayed their values, and I don't think that that's going to change, at least for some time on the national level. As you referenced, the party on the left that carried the most energy, that had the most excitement in the last elections, was La France Insoumise, the party of Jean-Luc Mélenchon, who's a deputy in the National Assembly now, who's the effective leader of the party. They had a lot of optimism coming out of that 2017 election. You know, this is a question that's caused a lot of debate as well. I think there is some who feel that the party overplayed their hand, immediately calling for protests right away against Macron's reforms, extremely confrontational. And I think for some people, the feeling was this was kind of out of touch with what the electorate and what the French public was feeling coming out of this election cycle. You know, they were just hammering Macron on every single point. And I think for some people, maybe the tone and also the constant trying to organizing of national level protests, not local organizing, but national protests, I think upset people. I think that's one thing. But I think probably bigger than that is the party has suffered from a lack of internal democracy, I think, is another major point. There's been lots of interpersonal squabbling. And the third point, which probably is the most important one in my view, I think it's the biggest factor, is that there was this whole scandal involving the police raids that happened, I guess, last fall now, so November 2018, where there was an investigation into campaign financing that was carried out. And there was a police raid that was done on the France Insoumise offices where Jean-Luc Mélenchon reacted very aggressively, you know, fuming, screaming at the police. This was captured in, you know, all the clips went viral on YouTube. There's one famous moment where he says, "The Republic is me," you know, which is a reframing of the Louis XIV, the state, you know, "I am the state." Mm-hmm. And so Mélenchon kind of flipped out, basically. The clips went viral, and I think that really hurt his image, especially because it sounds silly, but Mélenchon had a lot of significant support from youth voters. And I think when you see those kind of clips going on social media and you saw the way that he was portrayed, it kind of really hurt his image. And he was essentially also alleging there was a plot to bring him down. And I think the way that France Insoumise handled that, essentially alleging that there was a state plot out to get them, I think didn't sit well with people. I think all that's really affected them.
Isn't, I mean, I guess I don't, I mean, I don't know anything about it, but I will say, I mean, there certainly was, we saw in Spain some actual very aggressive state targeting of Podemos, and that absolutely did happen. That's on the public record. And, you know, it's a very different context, but we've certainly seen with Lava Jato attacking left leaders, most infamously the political imprisonment of Lula. Sure. So I do want to say that I, you know, when I saw that happen, I don't know enough to comment, but I didn't have the instinctive like, oh, well, that's ridiculous. You know, it was like, I don't know. You know, I mean, I've seen it happen. I had a friend on a local level working for healthcare expansion. The Koch brother group tried to do that to him. I mean, this happens. So, you know, who knows?
This is my take on it, but I know that there are people that are big supporters of the France Insoumise who would disagree. And that's certainly, Mélenchon has certainly tried to draw the links with what's happened to him with Lula, to the situation with Podemos. There's also attacks that the Mélenchon followed up against the press and even good investigative left-wing outlets following that. You know, alleging the press to be out to get him. And I think that attitude has rubbed people the wrong way. Right. But certainly there are people who would disagree with me. There's no question.
So you're seeing, though, you have a great new piece in Jackman called In Marseille, the French Left is Finally Uniting. And it's just so interesting because one of the, like, we need in the United States and probably in the UK more of that sort of like broader set of organizing, like they'd say in the UK, like extra parliamentary pressure or whatever. And it seems like in France, there is all of these critical formations in terms of, I mean, you can get people to strike in France, which is mind blowing. You do have certain union power, and the political parties are where you really need strategic intervention because it's been in disarray, as you've documented. What's happening in Marseille that might be a roadmap for the left revitalizing itself across France?
So this is ahead of the municipal elections. So basically the local elections that elect the town council and then the mayor as well, who's directly elected from the council and in big cities. These elections are happening March 20th. And I was in Marseille to report where there's a rare coalition of various left-wing parties that are joining together, running on a single ticket. So you have in this coalition the parties that we just discussed, the Socialist Party and France Insoumise, whose leaders do not like each other, to say the least, on the national level, who are constantly who have repeatedly criticized one another and each other's parties on the national level, working together in Marseille along with the Communist Party, which has also had its issues with La France Insoumise, and then a whole array of other smaller formations, including Génération, which is the party of Benoît Hamon, who was the socialist candidate in the 2017 presidential election, who then left the Socialist Party to form his own group, which is also part of the DiEM25, Yanis Varoufakis's pan-European movement. So in any case, you have these different formations in Marseille working together on the local level to have a single ticket for the municipal elections. And it's important to stress that in general in France, municipal elections do encourage parties to work together. What's interesting about Marseille is, one, the scale. Marseille is the second largest city in France. It's a huge city. And then secondly, I think that the scale of the cooperation too is very impressive in Marseille. The fact that you have the Socialists and France Insoumise working together, so Mélenchon's party and the Socialists in this coalition together. And Marseille is also a very politically interesting place. It's a city that's heavily working class, that has a strong minority populations as well, people, North Africans and also French people with North African descent, big immigrant population. It's a city that in 2017 voted for Jean-Luc Mélenchon in the first round of the election. And then if you looked at recent elections, the city has, I think in the most recent European elections, the National Front actually came in first in the European elections, which is to show you the difference that turnout makes really in that city. And Marseille is also, lest I forget, a city that's been governed by a mayor who's been at the helm for more than a couple of decades, who's now 80 years old, has faced a lot of allegations of corruption and clientelism. Mm-hmm. And what happened in Marseille to really spur this left-wing coalition to working together was you had a collapse of two different buildings in downtown Marseille, which ended up killing six people. And that episode that was last year really drew attention to public housing, the state of housing in the city overall, and really in a more general sense, the city's neglect for its least well-off residents, for its working class residents who make up a huge proportion of the city.
Absolutely. What is the role of the Green Party in all of this? They play such a contradictory role. I mean, I think actually clearly emerging across most of Europe as some type of kind of centrist formation. What is their role in this alliance in Marseille?
Well, the Green Party in Marseille does not back the left coalition. They're running their own candidate, at least for the moment. Perhaps that could change in the coming months. Again, we have until March, and you maybe could have a situation where there's two rounds of voting. So each list that has more than 10% can make it to the second round. In theory, you could imagine a scenario in which the Green Party gets 11%, this left coalition gets 15%, I don't know, and then they can merge. So there is a possibility for them to merge, but the Greens have not backed this coalition so far. And the thinking is this kind of comes out of their the wave of elation that they're riding following the European elections,
right?
In which they had a higher than average score. But there's a lot of doubt over how sustainable this is. The Greens were kind of an option for frustrated Macron voters, for some voters in the left that saw no option in the European election. Those elections also have relatively low turnout. So it's totally unclear whether the Greens are actually going to be a force to be reckoned with in the long term. There's also been talk to bring things back to the national level. Mélenchon has even proposed an alliance with the Green Party, which is something that he absolutely was opposed to at the beginning of Macron's presidency back in 2017. Mélenchon has proposed the idea of a joint France Insoumise Green coalition. I was just reading a new book that's out by a deputy from France Insoumise, who's sort of the kind of a Michael Moore of France. He's been compared to François Ruffin, who's a documentary filmmaker who's elected with France Insoumise, who's very popular. And he talks about the need to bring red and green together. So, you know, the Greens are certainly seen as a force to be taken seriously on the national level. And just maybe to finish as well, following this, to bring it full circle here, is this movement against retirement reform is really interesting in that it's actually bringing together trade unions, and it's actually bringing together left-wing parties in the streets. The socialists are against the retirement reform. The Greens are against the retirement reform. So is France Insoumise. So is the anti-capitalist left. And all these parties are together in the streets. And I think it was yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, it might have been Tuesday night in Saint-Denis, so a suburb just north of Paris, there was a panel that was organized that for the first time brought together all these parties on the same panel, which might sound silly and meaningless to outside observers. But in France, it's a big deal where you have this vicious infighting between these various forces. They were all together earlier this week, and supposedly they've agreed to also join together on next Tuesday. So what's kind of ironic here is that Macron is bringing together right. Trade unions and bringing together the left in a way that they weren't, you know, when it wasn't happening several months ago.
That would be his greatest contribution to French and international politics.
Perhaps.
Cole Stangler, the piece is in Marseille, the French left is finally uniting. Follow Cole. We'll have a link to his Twitter where you can do all things left, French, and labor internationally. Cole, I really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. All right, folks. Become a member of the Majority Report today, majority.fm/become a member. That's how this show happens. Check out justcoffee.coop, fair trade tea, coffee, or chocolate. Check out the Majority Report blend. If you're watching this and you haven't clicked subscribe, definitely click subscribe on the YouTube channel. And then go right over to the Michael Brooks Show YouTube channel, where we are basically we're at well over 92,000 now. So we got to hit 100,000 subs as quickly as possible. Go do that. You can watch the full streams of our live shows Tuesday nights. I do two additional streams a week. And then we have regular, like, three different clips a day. It's a full service YouTube channel. A lot of global coverage, a lot of other stuff going on. Michael Brooks Show on YouTube. And then, of course, to get all of the 2 or 3 to 1 Patreon content, you go to patreon.com/TMBS to become a patron today, patreon.com/TMBS. And come see us February 7th at the Bell House. Incredibly excited with Alona, with several other amazing guests. We sold out Philly, so don't dally. Grab your tickets. Link in the show description or Michael Brooks Show at Bell House in Brooklyn, February 7th. We'll see you there. Jamie.
This week on the Antifada, we speak with Alex Vitale, author of The End of Policing, as well as a sociology professor at Brooklyn College, about the recent FTP protests in New York. I should say recent and ongoing because they're still happening, and that's something that folks can get involved in still if they want to, as well as various other struggles against the carceral state. He goes through the history, a little bit of the history of the modern police state as we know it in the U.S. And just we talk about all the evilest things you could possibly imagine are at the foundation of the police state. He talks about some of the liberal reforms and why they really don't work for the most part to rein in the power of the police to oppress and terrorize a population. And we talk about what would actually need to happen in order for these problems to improve or go away. So I think this is a good episode. Check it out. Patreon.com/TheAntifada.
Sweet, Matt.
Yeah, folks. Literary Hangover, The Crucible. Check it out. You've probably read the play in school, so that might be good for you.
See you guys in the fun half. Oh, see you guys in the fun half. 1 second. See you guys in the fun half.
Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd,
don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Rand Paul.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agreed.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook. Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's. I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me,
hey, shut up.
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.